This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm the number one fan. Me
and my. Welcome to episode 129 of Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. This episode drops on Spotify on Mother's Day weekend, 2023. And I thought this week I would like to feature my better half, the mother of my three kids, the grandmother of our grandchildren, and my closest friend for going on 48 years, Trish Tuning, Trish Stark Tuning. Trish was from Wichita, Kansas, and we are going to talk about how we met, and Trish is going to share her testimony. I'm replaying episode 33, which was titled Meet My Wife. So this is really the same episode. I'm calling it My Better Half, because she truly is my better half. Trish is a great athlete, especially on the tennis court. She's a wonderful gardener. She knows how to improve the appearance of wherever we've ever lived. And she's been loyal. I love her. We've never had to worry about unfaithfulness between the two of us. And she is a great partner in prayer. You may or may not know this, but I don't see out of one eye. And I've had several tell me that Trish is my other eye spiritually. Trish has a lot of discernment. She's kept me from hurting myself by trusting the wrong kind of people. And I have hurt myself at times when I didn't listen to her. So let's go back to the episode number 33, when Trish and I sat down at our kitchen table with not very good recording equipment, and she shared her life. This is my better half. I want to play a couple of songs with my band. The first song is called In the Beginning. I wrote this one in about 1973, but didn't sing it for decades until earlier this year. I've dusted it off and began tweaking it. And so the band and I went in and recorded it last week. Everything was good.
in the Toure Bell. Sin cast its spell. Then the darkness fell once more.
I want to repeat a song that we played on last week's episode, and it's just called I Don't Want to Keep You Hid.
I wrote a song not long ago. said she'd see what she could do. But there was just one problem. She said those words are much too bold. Could you tone it down just a bit?
I've entitled this episode, Meet My Wife. It's my great pleasure to introduce to you my wife of almost 46 years, Patricia Tuning. We call her Trish. Trish is not the kind of person who grabs the microphone or takes the spotlight. I remember one time when I was pastoring, we had a friend who brought a friend to our church for the first time. And they sat on the back row, and the friend turned to our friends who were members and said, "What is it with this woman down the row from us? She's showing her kids pictures of the pastor. What's her problem? Has she got a thing for the pastor or something?" And they said, "She is the pastor's wife. She's not the type that sits on the front row or whatever. She likes the back row." She's in the spotlight on the tennis court, though. She's a wonderful tennis player. And a great wife. So it's a great pleasure for me to have her sit down and talk about her life with me at our kitchen table a couple of days ago. I have sitting at my kitchen table with me right now the most important person in my life, my wife of 46 years, Trish Tuning. She is my rock, my encourager, my supporter, sometimes my coach, my advisor, my prayer partner, and my yard work supervisor. So welcome to our little show, Trish.
Thank you.
Trish, tell the people where you were born and raised and some of your family background.
Our backgrounds were very different. You were raised in the rural South. And primarily, I was raised in Wichita, Kansas, except for a few years in California, and then moved away when I was 19. But my parents helped start a congregational church in Wichita, and there was some disruptions in the church. My dad took a job in the LA area of California. We moved away and then moved back and never knew them to go back to church again or to even mention God, to pray or talk about religion much at all until they became Christians when you and I were married. So you being raised in the church, going to church all the time, and me having no church affiliation was very different. And I remember thinking that my parents were really good parents. My dad worked hard. My mother stayed home after she had my sister, who was older than me. She left a career in nursing. My dad wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. She was a great stay-at-home mom. She loved to cook, bake, clean house, sew, do all the home arts. And my dad worked hard to give us a good life. And they were great parents. But I don't ever remember them praying with us before bedtime or taking us to church. In fact, when I was baptized when I was 15, I asked them to come to my baptism, and that was a really difficult thing for them. They did not want to go. So that's my background. But at 11 years old, I remember getting saved. I always was curious about God, and my friends who went to various churches, I have a Heinz 57 kind of background with religion. I would go to various different denominations, and one of my friends, when I was 11, invited me to a revival, and this was a highly Pentecostal church. They literally rolled down the aisles. Being raised in a very quiet, pragmatic type background, my father was an accountant, not a lot of emotion in the house. It was a shock to see grown men rolling down the aisles and scared me. And it was a hellfire brimstone kind of.
How were they rolling?
They were literally rolling down the aisles.
How were their heads or sideways?
Sideways, like a log roll. And I remember hearing the sermon about going to hell, and I was always frightened of hell. And that kind of led me to an altar experience that I could probably point to the fact that it was a salvation experience.
Out of fear.
Out of fear. I was very afraid of God.
Okay, let me jump in here. Your parents actually acted more Christian-like than probably most Christians that I knew, even though they were not... they had not made a commitment to the Lord, but they were very old-fashioned in their morals and their standards and honesty and all that. Your people, the Starks, settled in Kansas back in the
pioneer days.
Yeah, you had a relative that went on a talked about going on a stagecoach ride.
Yeah, it was a great-great-grandfather. I couldn't tell you how many generations back when the drought hit Kansas around the Dust Bowl time. This happened again, but an initial drought in Kansas when the crops were drying up, he packed his wife and child on a covered wagon, went to Colorado, and helped build the water line at the Royal Gorge. So they were resourceful, hardworking people, what some people call old soddies. They would build houses out of old sod, and they were pioneer type people. My grandfather was a farmer who worked for a wheat farmer and had his own farm. And my grandmother was a teacher until she married and had children. And they were country people. She was in Oklahoma, so my mother was raised in Oklahoma. So I was used to being around country life, but pretty much raised in the city. And my parents were truly really good people. My father worked hard. He introduced me to a lot of sports, a lot of creative opportunities. And My mother, like I said, was a stay-at-home mom, and they invested their lives in our children. Many years later, one of my very best friends, who had a terrible home life with men, said to me that my dad was a salt-of-the-earth kind of guy. And I remember many of my relatives, particularly on that side of the family, my dad's family and my grandfather, who were the kind of people that their word meant as much as anything they wrote down on paper.
Okay, we got to tell the story before we get in any further of your relatives that had some visitors for lunch one day out in the prairie. Do you want to tell it or me?
You can tell it.
Okay, you had a relative. Do you know who they, how far back they were or who they were?
It was a grandfather many generations back to whatever year that was. It was a long time story.
It
was
the 1800s, of course. But back in the old days in Kansas, of course, you didn't have restaurants when you went on trips. There weren't that many restaurants. So the common practice was, if you were riding down the road out in the country, you would just knock on the door and ask a farmer or whoever if you could buy supper, if you could have supper with them. That was sort of the way it worked. So Trisha's relative, they were getting ready for supper, and there was a knock at the door. There were several men, and they asked if they could eat supper, and they had a peculiar request. They wanted to sit by a window, and so they kept looking out the window, and they were eating very fast. And when it was all over, when they gulped down their food, looked out the window, one of them pulled out a gold coin, slapped it on the table, and said, "Well, you can tell your grandchildren you had lunch with the Dalton gang today." The Dalton gang was one of the most notorious bank robbers, robbing gangs of Kansas. So they were legendary. So they ate supper with my wife's people. Okay, so you grew up actually having to walk to church on your own, right? Did you walk or ride your bike or?
Well, various things through the years. I think to back up why I was always interested in God when my family really wasn't, particularly mom's side, they were not religious people at all. When I was very young, my dad tells the story when I was born, he used to throw me over his shoulder and walk me all night so I could breathe. I had terrible cases of asthma and allergies. I caught everything in school that came my way, colds, upper respiratory diseases. I think my sister probably hated me because of that. But many days I was out of school, I look back at my report cards and wonder how I made such good grades. And I probably wouldn't have passed in today's standards because the amount of time I was out of school with bronchitis and strep and upper respiratory things. So I think all those days when I had high fevers and was homesick with antibiotics, that my mind probably matured a little more than most children, because I did think about death. I did think about what it meant to have a relationship with God, and always was puzzled by him, tried to figure him out. And so my friends who did go to church invited me, we would talk. So I visited Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, various churches over the years, and then a Mennonite Brethren church was a few blocks from our house, so I walked to church every day. A friend of mine, Debbie Franz, her parents were longtime Mennonites, and she invited me to the church, so I would sit with her often in the pew. Sometimes I would sit by myself. And in the 70s, that was a little peculiar because they were not the old-fashioned Mennonites, but they still dressed very conservative, and I had a lot of short skirts and wore my hair very modern with lots of makeup. So I'm sure looking back that I may not have been the most welcome child to enter church, but the pastor there was wonderful. And he and his wife welcomed me, and I went through the membership classes and became baptized when I was 15 in the Mennonite Brethren Church. So I guess you could tag me as a Mennonite Brethren Church member. And then later, I wanted to go away to college. I visited Oklahoma State and various colleges, but nothing sat right with me. And I did get an academic scholarship to the Quaker University in town, Fringe University. So I have some Quaker in me too.
And how did you get, this is important, from Wichita, Kansas, and of course I'm from South Carolina, I was living in Indiana, but you had no connections in Indiana. How did God get you from Wichita to Indiana? Of course, you were getting ready to say you went to Friends University for a year, was it?
Right. I had my Old Testament courses there, which were wonderful. And at the time, there was a group that visited the Mennonite Church. The fellow who was in charge of World Impact in Wichita talked about their ministry, and I became very interested in joining World Impact. I was looking at going back to California, and so my plan at the time was to major in religion and teaching. My plan at the time was to major in religion and education and get some skills in counseling so that I could do street work, live in the ghettos or the lower income housing areas where World Impact serviced, and spend time ministering to teenagers, working in youth programs. So that was my goal at the time, and yet I felt unsettled. I was working and going to school in Wichita, and I had a good friend who was a Church of God, pretty much like Lawrence, longtime family association with many ministers in the Church of God, and we would talk frequently about our future. She was engaged at the time, and I didn't see anything beyond where I was at. And she had a dream one night that she saw us at Anderson College in Indiana. I had never been that far east. We always vacationed in the west. And she saw us at co-ed dorm as roommates. And that was peculiar because not only was she engaged, but she said co-ed dorm was only open to upperclassmen. Now, co-ed dorm at a religious school at that time was just divided in half. One side guys and one side girls. Did not mean they shared the same floors. There was pretty good lock systems at co-ed dorm. So we went to visit. I presented the idea to my father, and he was not keen on it because that meant losing all of my scholarship by moving away. But it just felt like it was God, and that's what happened. And we did indeed end up at co-ed dorm. They opened up a couple of suites to transfer students, and that's where I ended up moving, all because of a dream and the obedience of my friend Jeannie that had the guts to tell me and to break up with her boyfriend. And so the next year we moved on to Indiana. I told all my friends that I was moving out east. Little did I know what moving east would mean when I met Lawrence.
When did Jesus become number one or a deeper life with him? How did that happen?
Well, I feel like I was always a searcher, probably again because of the amount of time I spent sick with fevers. And then the opposite side of that is when I was well, I was always busy outside, didn't like to be inside. My father was a great gardener, and I loved him, and we spent a lot of time in the garden. We did a lot of athletic stuff. Our weekends, as family weekends, we did a lot of boating and water skiing. So I was very active, and there were times that I just struggled with the meaning of God, what it meant to live a Christian life, but I was always interested in God, and I can say when I got saved, I did make Jesus my number one person in my life, but I always struggled to understand him. And I read a lot of the Old Testament, which reinforced to me that God was a pretty harsh God. And I didn't want to, I knew there was a better way of understanding God. There was something missing in my life. So when I moved to Indiana, I visited various churches, but again, I didn't have transportation. My dad dropped me off in Indiana. We went to Muncie and picked up a Schwinn bike, and that was my mode of operation. I biked everywhere. A lot of times on the weekends, I would do study times with some friends, and we would go out, ride for miles, and take picnics, and was that was the way I got around. So I still felt like there was something missing, and I met a couple who talked about the Holy Spirit in a way that I had never experienced. And when I began to look around for churches, because I didn't have a car, I ended up going to a house meeting that Lawrence had off campus, just a few blocks, and God became more real to me in the aspect of the Holy Spirit. He began to work with me in different aspects of my life that I had struggled with, and showing me more his aspect of love and the gifts of the Spirit. And that was an instrumental thing when I was about 19 to fast forward my relationship with Lord, the Lord, the things I was really looking for, the things I saw in Scripture that I didn't meet up to, the things that I wanted to achieve that was not possible on my own.
This is all that I ask. Here I am, send me forth. Fields are ripe, time is short. Hear my plea, fall on me, holy fire. Give me strength for the task. Take me higher, close to thee. This is all that I ask. Here I am, send me forth. Fields are ripe, time is short. Hear my plea, fall on me, holy fire. Holy fire, just fall on me. Give me strength for the task. Take me higher, close to thee. This is all that I ask. Lord, here I am, send me forth. Fields are ripe, the time is short. Hear my plea, follow me, holy fire. Just follow me, holy fire.
If you joined the show after it began, I am doing an interview with my wonderful, lovely wife, Trish. We will celebrate our 46th anniversary later this summer. And it's just a great joy for me to have her on the show. She's been talking about her journey of faith and how she came to Christ and how he's led her over the years. We are now going to talk about the way God brought the two of us together. This is actually part one of a two-part interview. We were going to just talk about the writing and the circumstances behind the anchor holes, but as we began to talk, I began to think, wow, this wonderful wife of mine has a lot more to say than just the background to a song. So she is going to take up this week and next week. So let's go back to the interview that we had together sitting at our kitchen table a couple of days ago. During all this time that you were deciding about the dream and all this, I was fervently praying for God to bring me to a wife, a good wife. The Bible says, who findeth a wife finds a good thing. I've known a few guys that found a wife, and it was not a good thing. So I'm just crying out to God for the right mate. And it's sort of interesting that as I was praying, this friend of yours was getting a dream and the wheels were getting in motion to get you transplanted from Wichita to Indiana. And then of all things, you become part of my house crew. But before that, and this is a kind of a strange story, but before you ever started coming to the church I was a part of, you came to one of my concerts. We met at a concert at a church outside of town in the spring of 1974. And I guess we'll just bear it all and just share how that happened. And it was not a great first meeting, but go ahead.
Well, let me back up to about when I was 11 or 12. I used to sit out in the yard. We had a 5-acre yard at the time, and I would sit out under a tree and read my Bible. And out of nowhere, I felt this impression that I was going to marry a minister one day, but it would not be a normal denominational pulpit type preacher that I was used to. And it kind of confounded me, but it stayed with me for many years. And I never really was interested in marrying a preacher, but it just stayed with me. So when I was in college, I had had a long history of dating guys, most of them Christians, but not the best people. And I started dating a guy that I really cared about. One of the professors at the college, unfortunately, took it on as his mission to destroy people's faith. And he would pick the best and the brightest and basically destroyed this fellow's faith. So this Christian that I met, who was now an atheist, we had a really good relationship, but we would argue religion. And I got to the point where I said, Lord, you choose. You just choose. Because I cannot make this decision on my own. I cannot make the right person come into my life. So a very odd thing happened. I was entering the foyer of co-ed dorm. There was a black and white drawing of a band, and it was just a pencil and paper type drawing, a poster that was announcing a concert at Ovid. And a friend of mine visited Ovid at times. It was outside of town. My eye went to Lawrence's profile, and the Lord spoke to me and said, that's who you're going to marry. And I thought that was really, really strange. I was, again, from a background of an accountant who reasoned things out, very practical, unemotional background in my family. And it startled me, and I just thought it was peculiar. So I asked my friend to take me to the concert because I just thought that was a very odd statement, and I wanted to see what that was all about. So I went to the concert, and it was a disaster. And you can tell them about...
I was in a very bad mood when I met Trish. And only if you're a musician in a group will you understand. But the concert was not going well. We were making mistakes. We were getting out of time. I think I was having pitch trouble, which has been a common problem at times. And there was a youth group that it was like a youth rally, and the kids were acting really immature and weren't listening. So we took a break, and I was angry. I was frustrated with the way the crowd was, but also with the way we were playing. And I was not in a very good mood. So her friend, he had told her, I know this guy. And she had seen this drawing on the poster. So she came up to me and said, Lawrence, I want you to meet a friend of mine. This is Trish Stark. I think I said hello, didn't I? But it was very...
And then you turned around and walked away.
It was all of 2 seconds. Hello, nice to meet you. Then I walked away. And I don't know if you could tell I was in a bad mood, but I was not my happy-go-lucky self. And so that was it. This great this great meeting turned out to be just hello and walk away. And that was it for months.
Right. And then I started going to the house group and joined the church and loved it. Felt like I grew a lot, but had no real interest in dating Lawrence. He was a lot older, different than anybody I'd ever met in my life.
Okay, let me butt in here. That we met in the spring of 74. before you started coming to the house group that I was leading, our church at that time was a group of house groups. We were divided into house churches. I think at the time you and I met, there were like four or five or six house groups. But we would have a large meeting every Sunday night at the YMCA. What a romantic place to fall in love. They had a room that we would rent, and there would be fairly big crowds would come to that. And this would have been in the fall. Trish went back home, and I think you almost decided to stay in Wichita, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And of all people, your father taught you out of it.
No, it was the pastor of the Mennonite Church. I had been disillusioned with relationships with a couple of guys at Anderson and felt like it was time to get on track and was looking at possibly going to Oklahoma State or another college. The problem was religious education in secular schools, many of my friends told me, were very difficult. So I was searching to see where I should go, and my pastor actually advised me to go back to Anderson, so I did. And
then we met shortly after college opened up.
Yes, right. And so we started going on dates, but they did not really go well for the most part. We were very different people, personalities.
Well, they weren't disasters, but it didn't really click a whole lot.
No.
We enjoyed the movies and the food and that sort of thing. But we dated from, I think, early October, late September, all the way through to Christmas break. And at Christmas break, during that 2 weeks off, we had both decided that the relationship was going nowhere without letting the other one know. We had both decided that we wouldn't be dating anymore.
Right. Well, two factors with that made a difference. Secular education still is a problem in Christian colleges because in some of my classes, family and marriage, one of them, there's all these quizzes and information, and it is from the secular viewpoint, talks about compatibility, and there was no way on any of those tests I took and information I was given that Lawrence and I should have even been dating. We were so totally different in personality and background. The only thing we really had in common was our love for the Lord, which is the biggest thing that anybody should have in common. But I did make the decision that it just was not going to work, and I went home, and characteristically, I caught the flu, gave it to the whole family, and on Christmas Eve, we were all in the emergency room, and I spent days in bed, and the Lord gave me the information at that time that maybe I was making a mistake. It kept going on in my head. He said, are you sure you're making the right decision? And by the end of Christmas break, and I decided to go back and talk to Lawrence. that I was going to break it up, but I was reconsidering.
Okay. I had decided that, you know, I wasn't going to ask her out anymore. There was never any relationship problem as far as tension or anything, but I had decided this would be it. When Trish came back to Anderson from the summer, when she had almost decided not to come, we were meeting at the YMCA, and it was almost like that song in South Pacific, "Some Enchanted Evening, You May See Her Standing in a Crowded Room." I saw her. It's like I saw her sitting in the crowd. I never remembered meeting her till later when we talked, but I was just drawn to her, and I thought, who is this girl? And I made it a point to go talk to her and ask her on a date within about a week. So it was just really a God thing that just in the crowd I saw her. So anyway, I decided that, okay, when we get together, I'm not going to ask her out anymore. Then you came to me, I guess at our house group?
After the house group had finished.
And you said, I need to talk to you about something. And before I knew what I was doing, I said, well, why don't we go out on a date Friday night or whatever. And after she left, I thought, what in the world's going on? I just decided I was never going to ask her out, and she wanted to talk, so I asked her out on a date. So we got together, and that was quite an interesting conversation. You want to? Mm. You don't want to share what we talked about?
No.
Can I?
Yeah.
Well, she basically told me what had happened with the second thoughts and how she had decided that we should break up and how the Lord sort of apprehended her and said, you know, maybe this is what you've been praying for, even though you're different and it's not what you have thought in the past, but you have wanted to marry somebody who loved God and think twice. And so this is what we did. We decided, I believe that night, that we would start seeing each other again. And we didn't know if this was a God thing that he was leading us toward a marriage, but we would not go out with anybody else, and we would just walk slowly toward it, praying all the time that if it was not God's will, he would show us or you know, cause us to not make our own decision. So we did that for a few months, and I asked her to marry me as we crossed a railroad track out in the country we were riding around, and I...
So romantic.
It was totally unromantic, because let me back this up. She had turned me down once. I asked her to marry me once before, and she just didn't feel it. I mean, that was before we broke up. That was before Christmas holidays when we went our separate ways for 2 weeks. So I really wasn't sure that she was going to say yes. So according to her, I told her all the reasons why was probably going to say no. And, you know,
all the reasons why you weren't a good catch.
Yeah, all the flaws. I was setting myself up for a disappointment. But you said yes as we crossed the railroad tracks.
Mainly because you spent 30 or 40 minutes trying to discourage me, and I got tired of you giving all the reasons why I shouldn't marry you. But it was an interesting thing in that it's kind of like marrying your own pastor. He was a pastor at the church and leader of the house group. And then when he was away doing evangelistic work, he did ministry work. So it was an odd relationship for me, not only because he was older, but because we were different. And it is kind of like marrying your pastor. And it was an awkward thing for me to adjust to, the lifestyle that he was doing. And then knowing that if I married him, we would be on the road right away, traveling and in churches.
Not making much money.
No. When I had talked to God about not joining World Impact and trying to reconcile that, I felt like the Lord said, I have not called you to a life of poverty, which I think is a gift, a gifting to people to be able to live willfully in poverty. But I reminded God of that a lot of times when we'd come home with very little or no money from evangelistic work, and God always provided in miraculous ways. But we did get married and started traveling with his guitar player not long after, and then picked up the band after that. So it was a totally different lifestyle than I thought I would be living, but we never got bored. We've always had quite a few adventures along the way. My parents, my whole family were afraid of Lawrence because they knew he was an evangelistic person, and they thought he was going to preach to them. And we made the decision. We prayed for them constantly. We would take trips from Indiana back to Wichita and prayed the entire way for the salvation of my mom and my dad, my sister and my brother and my other family members. And after many, many years of praying on my own and then with Lawrence and I, all of them came to the Lord one by one. So I think our stance of not pushing things and being in their face and just trying to live the life and love them made the difference. So that was a wonderful gift the Lord gave me when we got married, the gift of being able to pray together and storm heaven for miracles, things that I've been praying for since I was 11 years old.
It will be 46 years in August. And I think the one thing that has kept our marriage together is commitment. We made a commitment. This is it. We've told people, you know, no back doors. Don't say the word divorce. Just make that commitment and stick with it. And we are very different. We've gone through some storms in our family and with our kids, and God's seen us through with everything. And I'm just wondering, Trish, if you want to say anything to anybody out there who might be listening, who is praying for a mate or has had disappointments, gone through a divorce or death, and is just praying for God to give them a mate. Is there anything you'd want to say about that?
Well, I think as a teenager and then going on to college, we are called to be different. And it's a hard thing for teenagers and preteens to be different. And I was always different. I was athletic. I ran with the popular crowd a lot. And I was always different, though, with the cheerleaders that I was friends with and spent so much time with. I was not one that ever agreed to drugs and alcohol and sleeping around, so I was different. And I think when we give our life to the Lord and we say, God, you choose who you want me to be with, then it makes us even more different, because giving our will to the Lord while living in the world is very hard, and especially as a preteen and as a teenager, to stand out, just like I did at the Mennonite Church. Thank God for godly people who accept you. But I know that looking back, probably many of those parents in church looked at this girl who came in with makeup and a short skirt, probably wasn't the most welcome person, but the fact that the pastor and his wife so welcomed me and made me feel like a member of the church, made all the difference. And it helped me to be introduced to giving your whole life to the Lord And God always works things out. So the best advice I could give is if you give that part of your life to the Lord, He will give you the best.
You've been listening to part one of a two-part interview I did with my wonderful wife, Trish. We will celebrate 46 years of marriage later this summer. I want to play a song I wrote for her on our 40th wedding anniversary called Love Song Just For You.
Just for you.
That's our show for today. Next week, Trish and I will be back, and we're going to talk about the story behind the writing of my most well-known song, The Anchor Holds. Thanks for listening. Hope you tune in next week. God bless.